Well, this Sunday, Sci-Fi, they're airing a show called Aliens on the Moon. What's that all about? In a moment, we'll check in with one of those that they talked to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. This Sunday, Sci-Fi airs an incredible show called Aliens on the Moon. Now, we've heard all kinds of stories of what astronauts purportedly saw when they were on the moon and other different kinds of stories. Let's check in with Joshua P. Warren live in Puerto Rico. Josh.
You know, George, you, of course, are one of the big stars of the Ancient Aliens program.
Not like Sukalos. He's the big star.
Well, you know, the thing we have to keep in mind is that we have all this weather here on Earth, and it is constantly wearing down the evidence. But on the moon, there is virtually no atmosphere. Now, they used to think there was no atmosphere, but there is a little atmosphere, but it's virtually nothing compared to Earth. And so imagine, George, if these ancient aliens stopped on the moon on their way to Earth and left traces behind, that might be our best bet to find some evidence. And amazingly enough, this special is going to show footage that is going to exemplify these amazing artifacts that may be on the moon that have been there for thousands of years.
And I think in some cases, Josh, it's very possible that some of those artifacts might be ours, artifacts from past civilizations that had technology here and went to the moon. What do you think of that theory?
You know, I am all for that. I mean, I must say, obviously, when it comes to understanding the history of humankind, we are only looking at what remains, what has actually made it through all of these tumultuous climactic changes. And if in the past humans did reach a point where they were evolved and advanced enough to make it to some other body, well, the moon would be the first place they would go. And so it's kind of frustrating when you think that there is no telescope on planet Earth that is capable of seeing the flag that was placed on the moon. And yet we have this sense that there is more going on up there than we probably as civilians can know about. And this coming Sunday, July 20th, is going to be the 45th anniversary of the first manned lunar mission. And that is the date when this special is going to air and show all kinds of crazy footage, including what may actually be aliens on the moon. And I became involved with this program because of something that I was exposed to years ago from a NASA Hall of Fame scientist who showed me some footage that blew my mind.
Well, there's a lot of strange things going on the moon, and our friend Bob Kiviat involved in that program as well. And, of course, he did the alien autopsy show that was on Fox, but has readily admitted to me that that wasn't real, may have been a duplication of what was real, but that actual film was not. And so let's hope on this one some of the things are real, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people have said to me, okay, come on, Bob Kiviat, he was involved with the alien autopsy movie. That was a complete hoax. So is this going to be another hoax? Is it going to be a mockumentary? Well, when they contacted me, they, and when I say they, I'm talking about Bob Kiviat and his production company. They were very, very extensive and particular regarding the type of material that they wanted for this show. And it all had to be based upon some kind of real, legitimate connection to lunar phenomena. And, you know, George, I talked, years ago to you about the fact that I used to be mentored by a man named Charles Yost, who was, again, the NASA Hall of Fame scientist. And one day, He asked me to step into his office, and I went in there, and he said, "Hey, check this out." And he put a VHS tape into his player, and the next thing I knew, I was looking at this sweeping view of the lunar surface passing below, and I said, "What is this?" And he said, "Well, this is footage from Apollo 8. Now, for listeners who aren't familiar with this, the very first mission to travel to the moon was Apollo 8. This happened in, I think it was 1968. And before then, humans had never been more than 800 miles from the Earth. And all of a sudden, NASA decided that they wanted to send men 250,000 miles to go around the moon. Now, that's a huge jump from 800 miles to 250,000 miles. And so here these guys were traveling around the lunar surface. And, of course, we all remember that famous Christmas Eve broadcast they did as they were traveling around the moon successfully.
Reading from Genesis, but saying, yes, there is a Santa Claus.
Right. Hmm. And so as these three astronauts were traveling around the moon, they were about 70 miles above the lunar surface. And they were they had a camera that was filming the landscape. And so here I am watching, again, the landscape passing by in Charles Yost's studio in his office. And all of a sudden, there was something sticking up from the surface that at first looked like a hair. And the funny thing is, as the camera passed, the perspective on the quote-unquote hair changed. It got taller and taller and taller and taller, and you could see clearly this was some kind of a linear object that looked almost like, well, in retrospect, I'd say a smokestack sticking up from the moon, because right as the camera was about to pass over it, it ejected a little puff of what looked like steam or smoke that kind of drifted off to the side. And Charles Yost was a very strict, no-nonsense scientist. And I saw this, and of course I said to him, "Well, what the heck was that?" And he looked at me and said, "What do you think it is?" And I said, I have no idea. What is it?" And he goes, "You tell me." He didn't know either. And so I ended up putting this footage on the internet showing the Apollo 8 film camera as it's passing over the surface. And then you clearly see this object sticking up, and you see the puff of smoke come out. And I talked about it on a number of programs, including Coast to Coast AM. And after that, I was just vehemently attacked, George, by a lot of people all over the world. They were saying, "Oh, you know, this has got to be fake. This has got to be a hoax."
And that was an unprecedented attack on you, because that normally doesn't happen.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I talk about weird and paranormal stuff all the time. And yet, when I brought up that particular piece of footage, it opened a whole Pandora's box. I mean, this is the only time in my life when I started having, and I dare I say, men in black sort of following me around and my phone being tapped and every manner of weirdness taking place. And so this coming Sunday, July 20th at 9 p.m. on the Sci-Fi Channel, they're going to air this two-hour original documentary called Aliens on the Moon, and that footage is going to be included in it, along with my commentary. But I have decided to go ahead and make sure everybody has ample opportunity to see this thing, and so I have that actual clip posted right now on my website, joshuapwarren.com. And I know, George, that site can get slammed when I come on this show.
It happens all the time.
So I've got a backup site. which is wishingmachineproject.com. It's a whole other thing that I, you know, you've heard me talking about the Wishing Machine,
yep,
George.
Sure have.
If you go to wishingmachineproject.com and click on the news section, you can also see a link to it there. But I believe that right now we have finally reached this precipice when some disclosure is about to happen, and I don't think it's going to be voluntary on the part of the government.
And Josh, we are coming up on the 37th anniversary, August 15th, of that 1977 wow signal that was picked up by Jerry Ehrman at Ohio State University working with SETI and the Big Ear radio telescope at that university, of a signal that lasted 72 seconds, and it had people going crazy, but it was never detected again. You're working on some kind of an experiment with that.
Yes, I am. Well, you know, I am joining you right now from the island of Puerto Rico, and probably an hour and a half from where I'm talking to you right now, we have the Arecibo Observatory, and that is where you find the largest radio satellite dish on the face of planet Earth. It's kind of like Earth's telephone to the cosmos. This is the dish that was used in the movie Contact. It was used in the James Bond movie GoldenEye. And I have been making friends with a lot of the broadcasters who operate around Arecibo. And I'm going to do an experiment on the anniversary of the WOW signal on August 15th, where for 1 hour I'm going to send a transmission from Arecibo back toward the constellation of Sagittarius, which is the constellation from which the WOW signal came. And I've been really spending a lot of time trying to figure out, well, what kind of a transmission do I want to send? And the reality is, George, you, sir, are the spokesperson for all of us here on planet Earth who are trying to understand these mysteries, who are trying to make contact, who are trying to move to the next level. And so I would like to ask you right here, live on the air, if you would be willing to produce a one-minute message for the aliens. If you, I mean, I know that sounds silly, but, you know, for whatever the beings are, that we can broadcast on August 15th, from Arecibo, directly back toward the constellation Sagittarius, over and over for the period of 1 hour. Will you accept that mission?
I would be honored to do that. What would you like me to say in that one-minute message?
Well, you see, that's the thing. I mean, you're the spokesperson. I mean, for all these years, you have talked to the most brilliant minds, the most innovative minds in the world. And nobody can even try to comprehend how that is condensed into your brain. So I don't know what the message is. This is something that, you know, you should just really take some time to think about. I mean, if you have 1 minute to speak to these visitors from beyond, I mean, what will you say? This is something that you have to surmise on your own. And what I'd like for you to do is just put that into a one-minute message recording, and we're going to broadcast that from Arecibo in Puerto Rico on the date of this. And, of course, we know that the entire universe operates like a big clock.
Sure.
So anybody out there in the universe who's paying attention to how all these concentric planetary orbits interact might be paying attention on that date.
You do know if we come and get destroyed, you and I are going to get blamed for this.
Well, you know, Stephen Hawking would probably point the finger toward one of us. But now, right off the bat, I mean, do you have an idea of what you would want to say, George?
Well, I would say something about, you know, we are the third planet from our sun in the Milky Way galaxy, the solar system. Maybe try to give some kind of coordinates in terms of letting them know what the planets look like here. And, you know, almost like the Viking did with its record, but a more an audio description of this. But aren't we taking a chance though of some strange alien civilization picking up on this, going, aha, these are the ones we wanted?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know that the transmission should necessarily be a transmission about locating us, because, I mean, they can, I'm sure, do that on their own. I would hope that you would send a message of such peace and understanding for it that those who might intercept it would come here and have some higher regard for us.
Wow, so yeah. They're going to say, look, we just heard this human being talking about peace and love, and on this planet, there are three or four wars going on right now. What kind of a whack job is he?
Well, you know, fortunately, I think that right now, the level of warfare and violence on planet Earth is actually lower than it has been than hundreds of years. I mean, we get inundated in the media all the time with statistics regarding warfare, but we are getting better. I mean, we are improving little by little. And you know, you never can tell if the statistics you're looking at are correct, but the ones that I've been seeing show that we are really trying hard. We are trying to improve to make everything a little bit safer. And so, on the other hand, though, what do you think should be the ultimate message?
I've got a great idea. Why don't we, and we'll do it appropriately, maybe through our website, ask the Coast to Coast listeners to submit to me, maybe by email, a 1-minute description of what they think we should see, and then I'll get you to look at it, see what you feel comfortable with, and then if I like it, that's the one I'll record, a message from a Coast to Coast listener.
Well, I mean, I think that it's great to be able to consider all the messages that come in from the audience, but you get to hear it all.
Well, I'll condense it based on what I get.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, after all these years of talking to people, I mean, right off the bat, what do you think is the ultimate message? Do you think that humans are getting better, or do you have a feeling of doom?
I'd probably use some quotes from the movie Contact, you know, that we're all looking for the same thing. Something like that. What do you think?
Well, what is that? What are we looking for, though?
Answers to how we got here, who we are.
Okay.
Do they believe in a higher power?
So in that case, we should really be looking at our maybe even genetic connection to who they are.
But should we do it in code? I mean, will they understand English?
Well, you know, when they sent off the probe before, there were languages from around the world. There were all these, you know, scientific symbols and whatnot. And, I mean, that's already out there. So I think that in terms of what we're trying to project now, maybe they're so advanced that what they relate to is human conscious intention. Maybe it transcends language. Maybe it transcends all the bulletin points of science. Maybe it actually is something much more pure about what your meaning is, and maybe that's what they can connect to.
Josh, we're going to take phone calls with you. You're live in Puerto Rico, and we're all over the place on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a moment with phone calls with Joshua P. Warren as we talk about aliens on the moon. How about that wow signal? And if you want to get into some ghosts, we'll take those calls too. And welcome back. Joshua P. Warren with us. Josh, before we take calls, what's new in the world of ghost research?
Well, you know, the world of ghost research, George, is becoming more and more blurry. And what I mean by that is that we are entering a period right now where there is a major UFO flap going on, and people are contacting me every day from all around the world saying, hey, I'm seeing UFOs, I'm seeing aliens, and oh, by the way, when they're not around, I'm seeing ghosts. and I'm having poltergeist-type activity in my house. And to me, this is a demonstration of how we're not just talking about one phenomenon. We are talking about an overarching phenomenon of this dimension that we live in, merging more and more with these other dimensions that are around us. And it's a matter of this reality sort of blurring into other realities.
Well, there's no doubt about that. But with some of the work you've been doing, you're the one of the first people to introduce us to computer imaging for ghost research. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I must say, as I predicted, a lot of people are trying to see that moon footage. And basically the best way to do it is to go to wishingmachineproject.com, and there's a news section there where you can click the link and you can see that moon footage. And when we were analyzing that footage to begin with, we realized the problem when it comes to trying to analyze footage on the moon versus ghost images, because that was really, you know, my initial background, trying to analyze ghostly manifestations. And at least when you have some kind of a ghost story, you can go to that site here on Earth and you can set up cameras all over the place and you can put EMF meters and electrostatic field meters in place and you can watch it 24 hours a day. But when you're looking at these bodies in space, what do you do? I mean, you can see things that look incredible, but how do you know the filter that these images are going through before they reach us here? And it's very frustrating. And that's why I think that ultimately, as our technology improves, we're going to have to rely on not just terrestrial means of looking into ghostly things, but also satellites and bodies in space to look at whether or not ghostly phenomena is something happening only here on Earth, or is it happening on the moon and other places as well?
East of the Rockies, Jeremy, truck driving in Minnesota. Let's get us started here, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Okay.
And Joshua? All right. It's an honor to speak with you. I've been listening for years and years, the first time I ever called. My question would be, or kind of an idea, maybe Stephen King kind of had a good idea with that movie where they had sound that was actually numbers. Maybe that would be something that the aliens may respond to.
What do you think of that, Josh? That's not a bad idea.
Well, you know, when we start talking about communication devices, it brings me back to a conversation that I was having earlier tonight with a group of people. When Thomas Edison invented the phonograph, he would go out and do these big demonstrations for groups of people. And many of the people in the audience still did not believe this was real. They thought it was a magic trick. They thought there was a ventriloquist around, or that there was some type of a tube that was passing the sound through. Because, come on, everybody knows you can't record a sound, right? I mean, you can't see it, you can't touch it. It just seemed inconceivable that you could record a sound. And I believe that we have learned from that and all the other things here in the information age about recording, you know, things that humans produce, that ultimately what we are moving toward is the idea of recording consciousness, the idea that consciousness can be captured and transmitted, and you can morph that into numbers, you can morph that into words, you can morph it into all kinds of different things that will ultimately be received on the other end. But I really think that the next big step that's going to take us from a type zero civilization to a type one civilization is the seriousness that we put into capturing and transmitting something regarding what human consciousness and life itself is.
Josh, if you're successful in doing this, you do know that you just open the floodgates to all kinds of possibilities. Gary in Sacramento, it's your turn. Go ahead, Gary.
George, what an honor to be on University of the Universe.
There you go.
Well, I'm sitting here just laughing. Let me take you off speakerphone so I'm clearer. Okay, we look at this transmission that we received, and we look at it like they sent us a tune, and I'm an old musician from San Francisco in the 60s. So what we're going to do here is get into an intergalactic jam session with these folks, or whatever they are. So we take 5 or 10 seconds of what they sent us. Look at that, like in jazz, we used to call it the head, the tune.
Mm-hmm.
So take 5% of what they sent to us, or 5 seconds, say, and then we improvise on that, and then we end it back with the first 5 seconds or 10 seconds that they transmitted to us. So if we can get a communication back, we'll call that consciousness, intergalactic consciousness, we can start an intergalactic jam session, and then maybe they can teach us how to ride these waves, and we can visit each other. That's insane.
Josh, anything's possible, I guess, isn't it?
Oh, well, sure. You know, I mean, when the WOW signal was captured in 1972, it was a 72-second burst of very organized information that was captured by the Big Ear telescope at Ohio State University. And the reason it's called the WOW signal is that, you know, the guy who was monitoring it was so amazed that he just wrote, "Wow," in the margin next to it, because he couldn't believe what was passing through. And the fact that there was some organization there could indicate that it could have been something as simple as intergalactic music. I mean, music does have this kind of organization. It has these kinds of patterns. And music, as we all have heard, is the universal language. So that could definitely play a role, but I, you know, when it comes to the message that you're going to be broadcasting back specifically from Arecibo toward that region, George, my feeling is, and I, you know, you are probably the most educated person on the planet.
Oh, no, and far from it.
Well, you know, I come on this program once every month or two. Every single night, you have guests on who are visionaries, who are Nobel Prize-winning scientists. You have people on who are telling you the best of what they have accomplished, and you're assimilating all that in your head, and there's nobody else like you. So I think that, you know, ultimately it's going, I mean, I don't want to put too much pressure on you here, George, but, you know, the facts are the facts. You are the ultimate spokesperson for taking the wisdom of humankind and trying to condense it into something to pass back out there. And, you know, I think that whatever comes from your brain and your mind is going to be appropriate.
Let's take a few more calls here for you, Josh. You're doing a great job out there doing what you do. How long are you going to be in Puerto Rico?
I'm going to be coming back to Asheville, North Carolina, where I have my Asheville Mystery Museum and all our tours and all that fun stuff in early September. So I've been down here now since January, and there's good reason for that, because I'm doing a lot of amazing research and capturing some great video footage, and I've got some UFO footage that I'm going to be unveiling soon. But obviously, you know, I'm here in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle because it's a hot spot.
It sure is. Do they still talk about the chupacabra down there?
Yes, they do. And it's not common. I mean, I might meet couple of people every year who have seen what they think of as a chupacabra. And in those cases, they definitely talk about it as being some kind of an alien or interdimensional type being. It's not like the chupacabra that you come across in the media and in the States, where, you know, often it turns out to be some kind of little mangy coyote or something like that in Texas or Arizona or New Mexico. No, the chupacabra here is a bipedal creature that has all kinds of characteristics that cannot be explained according to traditional ordinary biology.
We go to Ann in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Ann, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George and Judge. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was hoping you'd have something about Arecibo, because on 4th of July, you had the wonderful show that you always have every 4th of July special. But when they had the regular news in between, when you have the bump music and your regular news, KFI News had something to do with Arecibo. They said that they had been receiving blips of radio waves, rapid and then a flash and more blips, and that they had come from well beyond the edge of the universe. I waited for you to say something, George, and you never mentioned it during your program. What happened with that story?
Josh, have you heard of that? I don't know if that was an old story.
No, because they said something new just happened in Arecibo. They're receiving something in Puerto Rico. And I said, oh, my God, because I remember the old one you're talking about. But this sounded like it was just now, recent.
Josh, I don't think you've heard that, have you?
Well, not a week goes by when I don't hear some kind of significant story about UFO or some other strange phenomena here in Puerto Rico around Arecibo or Aguadilla, which is a town on the northwest corner of Puerto Rico. It's just a situation where I have people who are calling me all the time, people who are showing up telling me about what they've experienced. And, of course, I've even got photographs and video stills at joshuapwarren.com showing not only UFOs, but USOs that have never been put on the internet before, coming out of the water and flying around. My only question is, well, are these military crafts? Or are these extraterrestrial? In some cases, they seem to exhibit things, characteristics that we cannot account for based upon our current understanding of aeronautics. But, there's so much happening here on this little island that it makes sense that there are secret military bases all over the place.
Well, and this is the one, you know, now that I've recalled what it was, this was just a real brief thing that happened about a week ago, but they think it may have been from a black hole or something like that. Nothing extraterrestrial.
Well, you know, here we are in the Bermuda Triangle. I mean, this place has a reputation for a reason. It's because that we are now learning that just as there is weather within the atmosphere of Earth, there is also cosmic weather that might interact with and influence what we can call interdimensional weather. So, you know, one day you might be in a place and, it's nice and calm and clear, and then the next day there's a tornado, right? Well, it's the same thing here on an interdimensional level. You might go somewhere and everything's fine one day. The next day there's some kind of a wormhole that opens up, and I haven't seen that, but I hear so many experiences people have had, it opens my mind to it.
Let's get one or two more calls. Carol is in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Carol, you're up with us.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Carol.
I was going to add a question earlier. It was about the aliens and stuff, but it was about why do we have to just assume that there has to be a creator that, you know, something has to create something that creates something. Why can't we just coexist?
Well, science doesn't necessarily believe in that creator. You know, I happen to think it would be more that way, but science tends to believe that this just basically happened. And Josh, that's got to be one of the most baffling of all. I was just talking to a physicist before you came on. Everybody's confused. Nobody knows the answer, Josh.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, ultimately, all you know is, hey, you popped up one day in this world that we, to some extent, have in common. And everybody has a different theory, a different idea about what's going on here. And my experience is not going to be the same as everybody else's experience. But I think the important thing here is to keep an open mind. I mean, if you believe in something, great. But disbelieving in something is, ridiculous when it comes to creation. Because, I mean, how can we know? You know, recently I was watching the Cosmos show that Neil deGrasse Tyson did.
And he's doing a great job with that, too, isn't he?
Oh, he's doing a great job. And he was talking about the fact that of all the billions and billions and billions of things that we know about in the universe, that only constitutes 5% of what your most hard-nosed, skeptical, stringent scientist will admit is there. 95% of the presumed known universe is what we call dark energy or dark matter, which is defined by the very fact that we can't define it. So if 95% of the universe is an unknown, well, we really don't know what's going on here, so why should we be presumptuous?
Josh, you take care of yourself. Let's talk more about developing that little phrase that you're going to send out deep into space. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.